Some of my colleagues at CDC have had the privilege to work with Men Can Stop Rape, and I know it's very exciting to see that you all are moving toward evaluating some of this, and I think that's really exciting because I know that CDC has always seen potential in this work. But I am, in fact, going to move forward and present and talk about something a little bit different, but certainly related to trying to implement different types of prevention efforts. And that is the building capacity to prevent intimate partner violence. I have no disclosures. I do have a lot of acknowledgments, though, and I will just leave them there for a moment and also mention that one of the co-authors on this, Jessica Hill, is back there in the room, and she is the project coordinator for Delta Prep that I'll be talking about today, and Margaret Brome, who is the team lead on which this sits, and we have several other partners to acknowledge. What I wanted to do with my time today is to tell you a little bit about the Delta Prep project, but to really focus on the evaluation because we're at a great time. Well, it depends how you think about it. It's sad because the project's coming to an end, but a great time because we've learned so much at this point and we have some data to really talk about what we've learned. And it's always challenging to figure out if you go deep on one part of it or kind of broad. And in this case, I've decided to go a little bit broad because I think it's an opportunity to do sort of a survey of some of the evaluation data that we've looked at to date that describes the project. So in addition to that, we're going to look at the key ingredients in building capacity, some of the things that we've learned about that from our coalitions, and also a little bit about some methods that we're using to try and link capacity building with these coalitions to prevention activities. And so let me tell you something about the coalitions themselves. Before I do that, though, if any of you work with CDC, you know we love our terminology and acronyms, and we like to do it a little bit different. And intimate partner violence is one of those terms. I know folks in this room, I don't have to tell you what that is, but we do use a very particular definition that sometimes varies from other definitions of domestic violence. So in this case, the CDC definition includes current or former partner, dating partners or spouses, so within the last 6 months. It doesn't necessarily include others, for example, living in the household or other types of familial relationships that are sometimes included in that definition. By organizational capacity, I'll use that term a lot. What I mean by that in this case is we are looking at integrating primary prevention in the work that domestic violence coalitions traditionally do. So as many of you know, this work has included a lot of victim services work, so really treating the effects or really dealing with the effects of violence. And we're really focused on, in this project, trying to stop intimate partner violence before it starts. So some of what Joe talked about, and certainly working with men and boys is a major strategy in that, bystander strategies that are focused on that. And finally, I'm going to be using the term prevention activities, and that's another one that's broadly applied. And in this case, we mean activities outside the coalition, both at the state and community level, that could be related to building capacity in the state and community to actually implement prevention strategies. So whether those are evidence-based strategies or things that are emerging from the field, but they really have to do with infrastructure and skills and knowledge around primary prevention of violence, of intimate partner violence. Can you all hear me all right? Am I coming through the mic? Okay. All right, excellent. So a little bit about Delta Prep itself. Going way, way back to about 10 years ago, the CDC funded a program called the Delta Program. And in the grape purple, the dark purple, you can see there are 14 Delta sites. And they received funding to work with local programs, so their member agencies, as well as their own infrastructure, to build capacity for primary prevention. So they've been doing this work for a long time. And in 2007, Robert Wood Johnson became very interested in this work, and they really had a vision, along with folks at the CDC Division of Violence Prevention. I don't think I actually introduced myself. I actually work in the Division of Violence Prevention at BEC, which is why I'm here talking about this. Why else would I? And I do things there, namely program evaluation, on this project in particular. So Robert Wood Johnson became very interested in this work, and they really had a vision to take this national, to really change the national landscape so that we aren't only focusing efforts on working with victims or in the criminal justice system with perpetrators, but we really are moving what we call moving upstream, using a public health approach throughout different levels of a social ecology in trying to prevent violence. And I think this was a really magnanimous vision that they had. And so we were able to bring on 19 coalitions to do this work. And I think importantly, the goal of Delta PrEP, which is a little bit different, or I'd say more focused than Delta, really was to build the capacity of these 19 state domestic violence coalitions to support primary prevention in their state. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that in the next slide, in talking about the role of these coalitions. So the last thing I'll say about this, though, is those yellow dots actually indicate states where there are dual coalitions, so coalitions, a single coalition that focuses on both intimate partner violence and sexual violence. And these are a really interesting part of what we're studying is, given the history of trying to work in primary prevention around sexual violence, we've been doing that a little bit longer on a sort of a grander scale to a certain extent. We wanted to see if, one, this work would start to be integrated, because sometimes they're very siloed for various reasons, but also if that would also, would having a coalition that was working in sexual violence on primary prevention accelerate the work around intimate partner violence. Okay. So just a few words about the Delta PrEP theory of change. The first is we have one, which was really great, and it really reflects a lot of work and conceptualization early on about what we truly know, both empirically, theoretically, and importantly, from practice, and that is learning from these 14 coalitions, what do we think will actually influence organizational change, so integrating primary prevention. So the overall idea here is that you can see in the yellow box all the way to the left, what was provided through the Delta PrEP grant were monetary awards, and I think it's very important to point out these were very small monetary awards to the coalitions, between $15,000 in the first year to up to $30,000 this year. And that $30,000, Jessica, probably will be a little more precise in this, but it's about a $23,000 base funding, and then they were able to compete for some supplementary funds that would basically be seed funding for some of the things that they proposed. So not a lot of money, but a lot of wraparound supports. So we provided training, technical assistance, what is still here listed as coaching, and we're now learning really is more peer-to-peer. Sharing and support, and that is that the Delta Coalition supported these Delta PrEP coalitions. We had an online workstation and a very grand vision about a community of practice. And if you have questions about that, I can certainly answer. I won't go into it in detail here. And then we had an online documentation system. And it's this system that the University of Kansas developed for us, Steve Fawcett and his colleagues there, that really allowed us to look at in real time what are the changes that are happening in these coalitions. So coalitions were documenting organizational changes as they made them, as well as prevention efforts. The green box, I think, is really the focus of how we operationalized organizational change, and you can see they're here in six dimensions. Structures and processes have a lot to do with the coalition's organizing documents, their mission statement, et cetera, and all of these other dimensions. And the overall idea is that the coalitions were expected to basically be a catalyst in their states for primary prevention. Okay. So I'll just quickly go through these. I got the time check, so okay. So we wanted to look at, are they building their capacity? What are the key ingredients for this? And how does building organizational capacity for primary prevention contribute to and accelerate their state and community work? And here's just a shot of the online system that they use and they entered into. And again, I can answer questions. We also had a rapid feedback data, so for our both our program improvement and for collecting evaluation data for all of our activities, and this really fed into understanding how they're doing their work. And we're also conducting 5 case studies, and these are the state birds of the states that are included. And if you can guess them, then I'm willing to tell you. But basically, there are 5 states, and we're using a method that is often used in business, that is a really efficient way of looking at, for those coalitions that have really accelerated far, what are the things that came together for them that made this happen? And it's a way we can really learn about them all, as well as contributions of Delta Prep, which ultimately we want to understand what that investment brought. So I'm going to do an overview of some key findings. And this is, again, from the online documentation system. What we did find is that the 19 coalitions have documented almost 300 changes at this point. And what they really have focused on is changing their overall organizational structure to integrate primary prevention. So things such as changing their mission statement, incorporating in overall trainings, working with their member agencies, and also certainly staffing, which is another type of structure. We've pulled that out because it's a particularly important one. And to a certain extent, they've also done a lot of partnership development and resource development, but interestingly, less around leadership. And one of the reasons I think this is one of the requirements of this project is that leaders actually had to be involved, not just sign a letter of support, but they came to trainings. That's the executive director and a board member, and they were also part of the activities. This could potentially not be helpful at all in just looking at it, but I'm going to tell you the story here because we just actually have started to do this analysis. And what I think the takeaway here is this shows the different types of resources they use to create their changes. And the purple line that has the white circle around it is when they documented that we only use things from Delta Prep. And then the red line you see is when they used other coalition resources, that's funding only. And then the yellow says they used a combination. And I think the overall point here, and this is really speaks to sustainability of these changes, is that they, there's a pointer. Oh, awesome. I don't know how it works, but, oh, okay, awesome. Thank you, Derek. So here you can see, I mean, I think the bottom line is, we looked at this by quarter, is at this point, they are the majority of what they're doing is either through their own resources or in a combination of Delta Prep resources and theirs. And so, and about a third are they're still using Delta Prep only. So this is one indicator that potentially what they're doing is sustainable by virtue of they've already integrated it into their coalition work. Okay. So in the time that I have left, I don't know how it went that fast, but okay. In the time that I have left, the other thing that we've looked at are the state and community prevention efforts, and I think the story here is they really are still focusing a lot on education, which we might expect, but what's encouraging is we see about 11% of the policy, and also targeting media. And if you have questions, we've been working with Berkeley Media Studies, we can talk about that later. We also looked at 8 key ingredients to creating organizational change, and I think the top 3 are things that we often see, but the remaining 5 really reveal a lot about the process itself in this creating a dialogue. And this, I think, speaks again to leadership style, even those leaders that didn't completely buy into primary prevention but were open to dialogue and disagreement, I think were much more successful expanding mindsets as part of that, integrating a prevention across and having a unified voice and supporting locals. Some preliminary findings, and I don't have time to go into them at this point, but if you have questions later. I think what we're really learning, and this is very preliminary, is what was really important about Delta Prep. And I think just the time and space to plan, it's that simple, was very helpful. The action planning process that we used, the opportunity to learn from peers, and of course the prevention language and framework, including the socio-ecological model that's used. I won't go into conclusions because my time has come to an end, but I'll just say that the overall implication, I think, is that this approach that we've used with action planning and these kind of rapid cycles where people are doing some focused planning, doing some things in their organization, reflecting on it, tracking it, looking at that data, is a strategy that we found to actually work that creates organizational change, and we'll be looking at whether that's sustained. And I think it has implications for other types of organizations and certainly other violence prevention work, where I think there are some things that are very particular to violence against women in this field conceptually that have been like having a gender-based approach that are not necessarily infused in other types of work. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much for your time. And Derek, I apologize if I did go.